You're listening to
the Music Interval Theory Podcast with TC and Frank.
Hello, and welcome to a new episode of the Music Interval Theory Podcast. My name is Frank, and today I invite you to listen to a masterclass we did last year on orchestrating an action-adventure piece. This masterclass is filled with practical information and musical examples, and you should take advantage of it. So, without any further ado, let's listen to the finished piece first, before we go through each section step by step. Let's roll. So the first thing that I want to mention is, to me, what was really interesting, Mark, what you did, especially in the beginning, is the hierarchy of the elements that you are using. Because it looks wild, it really looks wild, and that is only because of the starting structure. These are clusters, and that is why it looks so wild. But if we structure this whole thing, let's say from bottom to top, right? We have the cellos and the basses playing in octaves. Then we have the timpani. Let's include the timpani right here. So this gives the foundation, and this is what it sounds like. This is actually not that complicated, right? And when you go to the next higher level, then you see that we have this rhythmic element here. Let me first show you the motor and the strings. Also, not that complicated. So let's bring this all together with the foundation. This is the fantastic thing if you write some action music. You are almost allowed to do whatever you want vertically, but it is really important to stay out of those things like sound design and dialogue, right around those other sonic elements, right? If you are asked to write to a scene. But in terms of the notes and how to combine them, you are almost free to do whatever you want. Then we have this line here, which also shows up in the woodwinds. The piccolo helps all the other lines here to cut through the mix a bit better, but it's just one line, and this is what it sounds like. Here we're coming close to the transition. That's another section. So we essentially have just three elements, and this thing, we have a G, A flat, and the natural A. So that all comes from the 1+1. And it sounds dissonant, of course, and it contains a ton of energy. And that is what it sounds like. Nice resolution, by the way, Mark, that you move. this comes a little bit unexpected, but you prepare for the next part.
Yes.
Right? So this almost acts as a divider so that people can understand, okay, this is the introduction and it sets the scene. And this is also good storytelling. But I really think if we listen to all of these elements together, it can actually become very chaotic quickly, although it's very organized. So let's quickly go through the first four bars with all the elements. Then this bar number four, where we have this rest point, that is actually very smart because this allows... Mark, I will quickly mute you. I'm sorry.
Sorry.
So that you can also click... Yes, thank you. I didn't want to be rude, Mark. I'm sorry. Yeah, this rest point here is very smart. Let me tell you why. If you get asked to write to a scene, then very often you have to deal with some edits where the stuff is usually shorter, not longer. And then, you know, you have to find a good spot where you can make the cue shorter, maybe half a second, maybe even less than this, to make the rest match the scene again. And those rest points, they are brilliant. You can even make the edit later in the audio. You don't have to go into Sibelius and find the proper tempo change or something. But this moment is fantastic. You can stretch it. You can shorten it. You have a lot of opportunities or possibilities to edit your cue in case you get a change. So let me quickly play over this transition real quick here. When we get into this next scene, so to speak, I think what stands out is the motor in the strings. You all are familiar with those time signature changes here. It makes it very hard to find a straight feel of the motor. And I think that Mark also did this brilliantly, because what I want you to do, I want to play you the motor. We can include the bass part, why not? Just the strings section. And I want you quickly to close your eyes, not look at the notes, and try to follow with the downbeats. So this alone, this motor alone gives enough chaotic energy, but still pushing forward. It never loses the momentum. And I think this is really great. It gives the audience enough energy to follow along, but it makes it pretty hard to stay on track, which means this comes really close to what the title is. Catch me if you can, Mr. Herling. There is an E and an R missing. But anyway, I'm not offended. We know each other for too long, Mark. This is all great. But I think generally speaking, this type of using this time signature thing here, that's also very smart. And this is always better than changing the tempo in every bar. This gets really messy if you go to a live recording session, because the musicians, they have to adapt to a new tempo. And it's always good to have an empty bar before you have a tempo change. Again, this makes this bar number four here very attractive to the conductor, because he can use that empty bar, so to speak. It's not empty, I know, but in terms of a rhythm, there is no rhythm in that bar. The conductor can prepare the musicians already, can give two beats, maybe of this 140, and then the transition into rehearsal letter A will be seamless. And this is a very good way of orchestrating such a tempo change. It will get messy if you had these changes here on every bar. I would definitely not recommend you do this. But that is a very nice idea to start with this motor. Now, let me guide the attention from the motor when we get into this scene to when the percussion enter, because they don't start on the first bar on section A. Actually, let's start from here. The The whole percussion section adds a little bit of more energy after two bars, after we are into that scene already. And that is the typical thing. If you visualize that scene, you might see a man walking by very hectic, but he realizes, okay, somebody is coming after him. And he picks up the pace and things get more hectic. That is brilliant because these additional percussion instruments that come in a bit later, they can do a hell to the storytelling, right? And this is what you can do later. Don't start with everything on the first bar because you're taking away from the opportunities that you have. And also, speaking of structure and hierarchy again, just by how this looks, we have the woodwind section until here, then we have the brass, and then we have the strings down there. And the strings start this whole thing with a little bit of the horns, actually, the bass bassoon. And then here we have a little transition in the brass. But this here, this stands out because out of a sudden, the brass section kicks in. The moment they come in, there are no woodwinds. They are staying out of the way. But then we have the woodwinds actually coloring. I believe they are coloring this line here. So let's just listen to the brass. The playback is really funny with this audio driver here. It really gets a bit messy sometimes, I know. But still, we get the idea. And that is the woodwind section on top. Actually, I missed these octaves here. But anyway, it's still the same line, but I cut off the body. Sorry for the clarinet players. But if you play these things together, let's actually do this because it shows up simultaneously, but you will realize that the woodwinds add more energy on top and in a higher register. Also realize the moment the trumpets come in, rest points, and this is also great. So the woodwinds, they are on their way out as the trumpets come in with a crescendo. It is almost like blending these elements in and out to create a seamless transition. And this creates this hectic part where you have a lot of chaotic things happening in the scene. This is a way how you can visualize this in the orchestration. It's not the only way, it's one way. So let me actually now show you this section in one go, since we have talked about a few of those elements, and in particular, the motor down there. Mark could have continued forever just by changing gears within those sections. It's always the same idea behind it. You have something in one section while the other one is quiet, and then the energy gets handed over. And this is a brilliant way to keep it interesting. This one here in particular, this is for the first time, I believe, where the woodwind section plays the same line as the brass section. And in particular, we have the trombones. All of these guys are trombones here, and they just create one giant line. The only thing that pushes the energy forward in the same rhythm is the snare. And the snare in that constellation gives more accent to the notes. So this highlights your transience. That's what the snare drum does. And we can quickly listen to that thing here. I will start from that bar. This funky playback. I'm sorry, guys. We have to redo it. This is fantastic. Oh, great. This was better in that bar. But now you see why I wanted to play the MP3 in the beginning. We have at least three different options in section A, how you can keep the energy up and running. Because it's a mixture of quick moving lines that you can double in other registers for color or for power. Then we have these elements here that show up in the trumpets against the motor that stops for a second and then picks up the energy again. And you can shift these elements around within all the sections available. Mark decided in the strings that he won't have any movement in the strings other than the motor. And to be honest, I have a guess why this might be. But Mark, if you want to chime in and answer the question why you didn't use the strings section for any lines, then I would appreciate that, actually.
There is a lot of things happening, you know, and it's important to not making everything too complex. If you have movement here and there and everywhere, the ear won't catch, you know, the human ear. It's better to have something like a pad or a rhythmic pad with a motor and to have a brass with winds playing around. Otherwise, for me, I didn't want to make otherwise too complicated.
This would also have been my guess. And also, if you look at those instruments here, they are all playing in at least 40 fortissimo. And the brass section in FF or triple F sometimes even, this would overshadow everything else.
I will say that the dynamics I put is dynamics for NP4 or for VSL. If I had to play for a real orchestra, I will review the dynamics to get what I want.
If you wanted to use the strings section melodically to compete with the other instrument sections, I think the only choice you would have had is to use just one giant line in three octaves.
Sure.
And if you had just one line in the violins, let's say, it would have sounded like a mistake against all these other things because it's not enough power to cut through, but it has enough potential to damage your piece. And the audience might have been confused, I think. So if you want to have a line in the strings against something like that, then you have to do it in three octaves, play it all in octaves. Don't even try to bring in a counter line and, you know, three parts or something. This is not very helpful. Let's actually continue here. Let's see what happens next. And I will start from bar 14. That is actually a great moment because for the first time, this whole motor now gets handed over to the woodwind section. Before that, it was always on the strings, solely on the strings. And now it is in a fairly high register on the woodwinds. And we see down there in the strings, we actually have this run up, which is just the same as the woodwinds. But then we have the rest point here where the motor is happening. And Mark, I want to mess with your piece quickly, not to make it better. That's not what I'm saying, but I would like to hear.
You can make it better if you want.
Now, that's a choice. I just thought, well, this would be a nice connecting note that makes sure that we can go out of this section and have a fluent transition.
No problem.
This one here, this is very nice. It happens on the harp. If you write for the harp, make sure that you get the pedaling right. Because if you use a pedal on the harp, then you manipulate the same tone in all the octaves at the same time. So you can't play something like three chromatics in a row. It's not possible without pedaling. And then the more you pedal on the harp, the more noise you make. And in a live recording, that is not what you're aiming for. So if you want to ruin a live recording with a harpist, give him lots of chromatic lines to play and let all the other instruments be either totally quiet or play pianissimo so that everybody can hear the harp pedals move. And this will be something that the recording engineer will love you for. He actually will have a very hard time in the post-production. Sorry, Mark, I hope that I made you laugh. But it seems that you're dying in front of the camera. Hopefully you're not.
Because I have got a cold and it's hard.
But this is all totally possible on the harp, and we can quickly listen to this run here. Yep. And this is also a nice idea to have this 5-tublet to increase the energy just a little bit by having more notes. I think, Mark, you did it because you wanted to bring in all the notes in there. Still, if you just thought about the energy, then having more notes is also a way to increase the energy. You could have actually started on this guy here with an eighth note, let's say, and then you let this run happen in the 16th note. And here we go to the five tublet so that the energy gets more and more as we hear this harp run. But essentially, the harpist later will just play whatever she or he wants, honestly, because if it's too hard to count, they will fake their way through the notes and it will sound great anyway, because they are trained musicians. But if you want to make them, really, or give them a hard time, and try to write some five tublets and then some seven tublets in there, let them alternate and ask for these exact tones, they will hate you. Because then they can't fake their way through the notes. But for a run like this, it is essentially just one setting on the pedals, and then you move it up more or less, because this is a scale tone run. So this is easy to play. This just indicates get quicker at around the end. Let's come back quickly to the transition part. And actually, let's start from here. These runs, and I assume that you wrote most of them last, once yes. You had the melody.
Yes, I wrote last because to bring them, to give the energy to come back, to come to the new section of C.
And this section right here, where it reads adventure, part of the challenge was to write something interesting with just one chord and one scale and make it interesting via the orchestration. And in here, you start with this line, and I'm hearing again a string motor. And if we look at those notes, then we have some bass movement always playing on either scale tone one or five. This is always your safe bet. If you don't know what to do in the lower register, always start with scale tones one and five. You can bring in scale tone three on the softer beats and stuff, but I would not start with scale tone three on the strong downbeats. And then once we look at the motor here, you realize that these accents change every other bar. So they are not repetitive in every bar. So here we have dun 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 dun. And here we have a different rhythm, like dun 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 dun. This is what most people would expect, I assume. But if we alternate between those two rhythms, you really make it more interesting. Because what you wanted to do, Mark, I know, you wanted to emulate that pad. You were not after rhythmic harmony, necessarily. That is something different. You just wanted to have the pad being presented in an interesting way.
Rhythmic pad.
So let's quickly listen to that without actually the bass. I just want to listen to the motor. On end, it got a bit messy again with the playback, but for the most part, it was clean. So this is the motor that we are hearing, and it gives a solid foundation for everything else. And that's exactly what we need. Then the next part, this all goes along with the strings. Whatever is in the lower register, you don't want to create a lot of complexity. The best bet is to start doubling. And it's interesting because you give a line on top and a line at the bottom, and then just the inner voices change.
Right.
And everybody who arranges songs, for example, knows that the most or the hardest parts to listen to and to figure out are the inner voices. Your ear always goes to the top guy, that's the lead line, and the next guy is the bottom guy that you pick up. So it's always the outside interval that you hear the easiest, and that is this part. And these two guys in the middle, they actually hide a little bit the moment we bring in the outside guys. But let's listen to the inner guys isolated. And now let's listen to this whole thing again, and you will recognize that it gets way harder to identify what is going on with the inner lines. Thank you. despite the messy playback, it's still very hard to listen to the inner lines, right? This is why your ear always wants to go to the lead line. And it's actually a distraction for figuring out the inner parts. That is why this works as a pad almost. If this line went on top, and we can do this quickly, just for the fun of it, Mark, I'm sorry. I want to bring this up as well. Just the first two bars. Now you can hear this line way clearer. Of course, since it became the top line. Now we can embed it in the section again. So here we have the trumpets that fade out. We have the horns now come in. And this is also a very good blend because it is the same pitch, but the sound slightly changes. Let's actually listen to that. Yep, it's a very nice entry into this whole thing. Then this all just covers the melody and helps the melody give a bit more high frequencies and energy. This is a personal choice, Mark. Again, I'm not saying that this is wrong or something, but I would most likely bring this piccolo down because this is really high and it cuts through. And I know that you are a fan of the piccolo. This one here is great in that range, but let's just have an AB listen to this version and then the piccolo up again. Now it's just an airy horn, so to speak, and going back to this version. You can really hear it. It cuts through the mix better this way.
I like the piccolo over there, but it's a question of choice also.
Absolutely. So for the sake of having the line presented clearer, I would leave the piccolo up there because it helps. But if you look for having a more airy horn sound that is just a bit brighter, but not so edgy on the higher frequencies, then bring it down one octave. And that is totally fine. Both versions will work. Then this one here catches our attention because let's see what happens against it. You can see it already. We have some accents here in the brass and they introduce now, or they actually shift the melody. Let's put it this way. The melody shifts from the horns to a solo trumpet. And then we have the rest of the brass section bring in some colors in the orchestration. So let's see what that does. Again, here we have the same structure. We have now this solo trumpet become not only the answer, but also raises the question for this trombone later to answer, right? So it just gets into another register all the time. And that is just an interesting way of presenting this motif. Now, what is also interesting is this line up there. And you have written down a ton of stuff here, Mark, so I don't want to neglect all that. Let's quickly see. So we have the octave runs. So these are just scale tones. And it's all based on a C Ionian scale as I see things. White notes. That's good for me. I can play this. Not at this tempo, but still. Let's give it a try. And this time I won't forget about the clarinets because they give the body and they actually play an octave lower, right? So we have the two flutes and one piccolo that is still one octave above the flutes. So this plays in three octaves. And it always looks wild if you see things like that, although it is not really that complicated. And I know, Mark, that you wrote down at some point, it might have been a bit later when you have this line also appear in the strings. You write about these eighth notes in there. So potentially...
I don't remember, but I think, yes. You know, because it was an exchange. What was on the woodwinds came to the flutes and to what was on the woodwinds, I mean, what was on strings go to woodwinds and vice versa, but without the melody, you know, afterwards. And then... you expand the time and it's easy.
And those things as well, they give a little bit of a break of this line. It would have been totally possible to play this through with 16th only. Why not? They can manage this from here to there without an additional breath. They can do it. However, this just gives a bit more interest to the line. Let me play this And I will now get rid of the clarinets again. Yep, that's a very nice rest point almost. Just for the sake of experimenting a little bit here. I actually just want to listen to this without any change in the rhythm.
I think it's less interesting.
I think so too. But for the sake of demonstration, let's listen to this. You start right here. You take one big breath and you whistle. Yes, really. Right. That is how I would do it. Not joking. And then you will realize when it gets hard, especially when these things here are marked with fortissimo, it's harder. But this starts a little bit softer and then it raises in intensity. And if you can't whistle it, most likely the players can't play it. But Mark, I want to bring it back because it definitely sounded better this way. It sounded better. I also think so. Now let's have a bit of change in the sound, and that is why we have the trombones. And this is easy to play, really easy to play for the trombones. This is just, you know, they can go with double tonguing if it's even faster.
You have to think of the players, always thinking of the real players.
What is a bit harder to play, speaking of the trombones, I want to come back to one thing that I quickly remember. For example, here we have the trombones. What is harder to play is this.
Yeah.
This is really, really harder to play.
But it is really, I've played trombone in Berkeley, and it, with a good player, it's really playable.
It is playable. But if you want to get all of these trombones players get mad at you, then just write a chromatic line over the full octave in a very fast tempo. And this is really hard with the valve. At some point, they would have to change and have to do a lot of movement.
It depends where are the chromatic line.
Exactly.
You will have a lot of movement if you go down, you know. But if you go with harmonics on the three or fourth position, you can, you know. Here it's quite difficult because you have to go downstairs a bit, you know.
Yeah.
And this one is difficult. But not impossible to play with great players.
That is right. By the way, these things on the horns, this is way easier. Horns have no problem playing those chromatic lines. But the trombones, they have to be skilled to play these things, the chromatic parts. Well, this is actually how you find out if a musician is skilled. Give them something hard to play, and then you will realize immediately, I've made the right or the wrong choice.
You could have some passage a bit harder, but you have to avoid to have a full piece really hard, you know, excepted when they have time to take the score at home and to work on their part, like in big orchestra, you know, Budapest or Sofia. When they are playing the repertoire, say when they are playing Stravinsky or that, it's not so easy, but they are used to play and to repeat, you know.
And also when we get to the trombones and using these things here, I believe the hairpins, they are crucial, because otherwise, if they played these things fortissimo or even staccato and fortissimo, that is not the effect that you want to hear in that.
It's better than ta-ta-ta-ta-ta.
They sneak their way into the scene almost. You can really hear it. So let's see. So this is important that you have the dynamics in there. Otherwise, the playback is not good. I would even argue the musicians would do this naturally.
Yes.
They would come in a bit softer and they most likely build naturally to the last note and end this phrase. Yeah.
Because you know the difference with the samples. When there is an orchestra playing, if everybody is playing softly, the guy who will enter, if he has no dynamics markings, he won't play loud. He will listen to the others and we play soft. You know what I mean? And then before, when you have to mark everything about the dynamics, but in a real orchestra, if you have not marked the dynamics, they listen to each other, you know?
With this tuba here, don't forget, the tuba has no point. So this has just body, right? And if you want to have point with a tuba, you need to have other instruments with it. One way would be the bass trombone. This has more point. Absolutely. This can be almost sharp in the low register. The tuba is very round. And let's just listen to the tuba on its own. It's not a very low register here, so it might be okay, but still. And you can hear it. It's not sharp. It does not have a lot of attack. So that is why we need this guy. And also down there, this is pizzicato, I think.
Yes.
And this has a lot of attack and point. So I think we also might have the bassoons. And we can give the bassoons some staccato here, but they will do it naturally if they see the eighth note with the rests.
It's better to put a little dot over the note than to write 16th note with the 16th rest, because it's more easy to read. It's 18 notes with a dot under or over.
And here is again the tuba with the other bass instruments. And now you can really hear the point and the transient and everything. But this is not coming from the tuba. Please don't forget this. We could have managed this, Mark, just for the sake of messing a little bit here. Let's actually do it this way.
I didn't do that because after I have the trombone's best trombone playing. It was the reason.
I know, but still.
Yes, it's sharper.
It is sharper. But with this thing, that is not a problem. Of course, this is really to support the tuba. So in this case, I would always double the tuba and the basses down there. Yeah. This always sounds better. If we had the C here, let's see how that sounds. I think it would not create a mess because it's still very close in terms of the overtones and that octave, but still
G and C, yeah, close.
But it would not be that clean. Let's see.
Yes.
Yeah. It almost feels like a power chord on the guitar, although this is lower than the power chord. I would definitely keep this.
And also you have to take care with the pitch of the contrabass, the bass, not to be too low. The pitch, the very low, a bit messy, you know.
And another thing is you actually don't want to divide the double basses. The fewer guys you have on those pizzicato notes, the worst it is. Let's bring all the players on pizzicato. This is also true for the other string instruments. So the higher they go, the lower they go, because here you want to have the bass in there. And the more you divide these guys, the less bass you will have. And it won't have the body that you are looking for. This is why in production, most often the pizzicato sections are doubled with samples later. Even if there was a live recording, this is what happens on most of the John Williams scores. You double the pizzicato sections with samples, although you can play it live on stage, but it is in the live recording, it is beefed up. Yep, this is essentially the same thing from before, but now Mark has changed the sections. So the only thing that is still consistent is the cellos and the bass instruments, of course, they are not changing. But that is a good choice to not lose this motor or the engine, because you have the motor here in all of the other instruments in the woodwind section, but still the cellos add to this motor and they are a substantial part in that register. So the bassoons, you could have used one bassoon together with the cello maybe and the other one with the bass, but you decided to let these two guys go with the bass, which is fine. Again, that's another choice. And both versions would have sounded great. It's a matter of what you want to hear. But I usually double bassoon or cello because I like the sound and they have a similar cash register. Let's quickly listen to the transition. Let's just go with the motor. No bassoons for the moment. Mm-hmm. Let's have a quick look at what is happening in the other sections the moment the woodwinds take on this line here. Who would have thought that? Now the motor shows up in the string section again.
What you have in the woodwinds goes to strings, and what you have on the strings goes to the woodwinds, and it sounds really good, and no melody at all.
And this is the thing that I was referring to a little bit earlier. Let me actually go down, where I said that at some point you were talking about these eighth notes, that they become almost a little rest point. Let's actually listen to this segment here. You can really hear it in that bar, in the second one. Let me play this again, because here you can hear that to the left and to the right, something different is happening. This makes it more interesting. So you could have gone with the same line in all of the octaves, but then it is kind of one line that is strong, working against the motor.
It's like playing ping pong.
And the interesting part is really how we get into this, because let's start with this line and then we transition to the line on the strings. Again, this moment, that is a great change because you have the rest point of the line, which means you give the woodwind section a good opportunity to go out elegantly. The moment they have this rest point, it's a good opportunity, again, to bring in another color. And it is the trumpets. Because guess why? The trumpets have been quiet for a long time. This is how you want to make your decisions as well. Please think of the musicians and how they would feel if they played just one note at the beginning and at the end of a piece. This is not a very respectful way of treating the musicians. So you want to make sure that everybody has a moment to shine. And this is just a great moment for the trumpets, that they can come in again and they keep up that pattern kind of here. Then the trombones, they mimic this whole thing. And the moment they do, we have the line show up on the trumpets again. So everybody has something interesting to play at some point. Here we have the bass trombone, most likely down there.
Yes, the melody, yes.
The cellos, they are consistent with the motor. They are your trusted friend. They never give up. They do a lot for the money. This little run, how it gets shifted through the orchestra and through the sections, this keeps it really interesting. And it is almost like a free spirit that, you know, moves all over the place. And in this case, Mark talked about that we have only the white notes of the piano. Here we shifted everything. Oh my God,
yes, because it's in D. Then you have C sharp and F sharp.
Let me actually play it from here again.
But when you do something like that, you have to write rhythm. You have to rely on rhythm and to make movement. Otherwise, it's flat, you know? This type of writing is very easy to understand for the listener, I think so.
This is good, actually, because what you want with this section of the piece is create a memorable lead line. That is why you are playing this line pretty often. But yes, you want the audience to take something away from this last section. Think about a movie, for example, Indiana Jones, and I haven't counted this, but I'm pretty sure the main theme shows up like every 3 to 5 minutes in the whole movie.
Yes.
In variation, of course, but still, it is the main theme. And at the end of the movie, there is a reason why you go out of the theater and whistle this. Da, 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 da. Of course you do, since you've heard it like 30 times. as some very successful television composers said before, as long as you can write the theme, do it, because you will keep the job, actually. But let's just go with the woodwind section real quick from here until the end, because I really like how you have the line here and then transition into the motor again until it ebbs down to the last note down there. So let's give this a try. The first thing here, this is lesson one from the composition course. Just write a line. Honestly, this is just lesson one, nothing more. This one right here, it's a little bit of harmony, I understand. It's not even a progression because it's just one chord. And then again, bring back your theme in various places. And this is nothing more than a reduction of the voices until at around the end, you know, we get to this last note. Another choice would have been to maybe have a little run in the high flutes to highlight this transition a bit more into the last note. But again, it's a choice. So nothing of that would be right or wrong. But in this case, Mark, you decided to just bring down the energy. And that is great.
Those runs in the woodwinds that go above the motor, did you write them with the melody in mind? And what I mean by that, Mark, is did you kind of put the melody in the woodwinds and then write the notes around them to make the runs? Or do they don't always hit the same melody note, I know, but did you do that?
When I wrote that, I wrote in the flow. F sharp, okay. A, da 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 da, what sounded good to me. You know?
Okay.
Not putting some notes and after joining them. No, I prefer to write the 16th taka, 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 on the floor.
Right.
TC, he explained something in the Prokofiev course that according to his analysis, Prokofiev started with scale tone thirds very often. And he would actually start with something like this, or let's make it, well, this one is not right. Sorry. It's actually, well, it's not scale tone thirds, I know. But let's say this would be scale tone thirds.
Okay.
Then he would start with something like that first and then connect these lines with additional movement. But that is a good way to still use triadic thinking to connect these lines. But also the higher you go with these parts, the less important the notes actually become. Because again, according to the overtone series, we have a root tone down there, which is based around D. So that is our root tone. Then in the next higher octave, we have scale tone 5, which would be, let's go to the strings real quick. That is our root right here. Then this is still the root tone in an octave position. This would be, on which clef are we? The alto clef. So that's actually a G, this guy here, scale tone 4. Then we have scale tone 5 in the next higher guy. And again, we have scale tone 1. And this is pretty much the chord structure as it shows up in that, yes, in that register. And this all comes from the D root tone, meaning now that we exceeded this D note up there, this one here, and all of that happens here in the woodwinds. So if we go up in that run, it really doesn't matter. You don't have to hit those chord tones. Just pick a scale. And even if you create a 13 down there, although it's pretty hard to create a 13 if you don't have scale tone 3 or 7.
When you go to a break, when you ta 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 ta, then at the arrival, take care. Just at the beginning, take care. And at the ending, the two pas. Otherwise, inside, you can do what you want.
But actually, Marek, the way you picked your structure, you can't create a 13 on top.
No.
If you stuck to the Ionian scale, then the only way, well, the only two ways to create a potential 13 would have been, yes, by using this guy and by using that guy, scale tone 7 and scale tone 3. If you had this in there, then yes, we would have run into 13s. But since you picked this structure... You can play the whole scale on top and nothing bad will happen. So, Mark, you have set up yourself to do whatever you want, which is brilliant. That is kind of the conclusion of this masterclass.
Structure your
bottom material intelligently so that you don't run into any roadblocks.
The advantage of the having doing the graduation at Amita is the freedom. Then you can be free. When I write, I have more freedom than I have ever had before.
When I look at those scores, like, you know, the ones that Mark sent in when he went through the course, I sometimes thought, oh, damn, that's actually the best solution to this musical problem. And there can't be any other better solution than this. So Mark has stolen the best solution already. And now I'm left with whatever is worse.
But I don't know. It's not on purpose, you know. I write and I write what I think is good.
As long as it sounds great, it is great.
Exactly. Yeah.
That is what the client pays you for. So all good.
Wow. That really was a ton of useful information, right? And before you leave, please do me a favor and share this podcast with your circle of music lovers and give it a 5-star review. This means the world to me, and I can't wait to welcome you back in one of the future episodes. Best always, and have a great day. Bye.
This podcast is powered by the Music Interval Theory Academy, your resource for getting clarity and confidence in music composition and orchestration. See you inside at musicintervaltheory.academy.